Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Well, hello to everyone who's listening out there. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Tevis Marshall. I'm a shareholder in the Richmond, Virginia office of Ogletree Deacons. So we have had a lot to discuss in Virginia recently when it comes to employment law. For those of you who have been keeping up with our trends, you probably know we have a brand new law that prohibits non-compete agreements against low-wage workers. We've seen a huge expansion in our state's anti-discrimination statute. We have another new law that protects independent contractors who believe they've been misclassified. And starting on May 1st of 2021, our minimum wage increases to $9.50 an hour. So we've had a lot going on here and can certainly appreciate that it's kept employers busy across the Commonwealth. This podcast is going to focus on one of the most recent developments, which is Virginia's new emergency temporary safety standards for dealing with COVID-19 in the workplace. This is a first of its kind in the country. The standards become effective on Monday, July 27th, but no need to panic. Some of the more burdensome requirements don't kick in until late August and late September. The good news is that if you've been following the directives in our state's executive orders recently and abiding by some of the CDC's guidance, you're probably in compliance with at least half of the new requirements in Virginia. So a lot of this is going to sound familiar to you. The not so good news is that, of course, there are some new requirements, which will include for most employers having to conduct a hazard assessment for each job position, some additional training requirements, and the creation of a written plan, which is designed to address infectious disease and preparedness in the workplace. We're going to talk about all these things, and all the materials that I'm going to be referencing can be found at the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry's website. That website address is doli.virginia.gov. And if you go right to the middle of the homepage, there's a button for coronavirus resource links. Click on that, and you can get a full copy of the new standards, a lot of sample forms, some sample training materials, FAQs. There's some helpful guidance in there. And I want to caution everyone that it's impossible for me to cover every aspect of these new standards in a 20-minute podcast. I'm going to try my best, but I want to encourage everyone to review all these materials on your own. There are some mandatory requirements that are going to apply to all employers and some significant penalties for noncompliance. We are going to be dealing with these standards for at least the next 6 months. So these are going to last through the end of January 2021, and I think there's a decent chance that the Department of Labor reevaluates things in the fall and winter and decides if that needs to be extended. So as I mentioned, there are some mandatory requirements that will apply to all employers in Virginia. Regardless of your size, regardless of the number of employees, these are things that everyone is going to have to do. So I've reviewed all the standards and condensed everything down to 14 talking points. So that's what we're going to start with. Number one, the very first thing that employers are going to have to do is assess all of the positions in the company and determine which of the following four categories those positions fall into. Those categories are very high risk, medium risk, and low risk. So we're going to table this discussion for right now and come back to it later because there are some special requirements for positions that are very high, and medium risk. And most employers are likely going to have some medium risk positions. These are the types of workers that are interacting with the general public and the ones who can't maintain 6 feet of social distance in the workplace from their coworkers and their peers. Number two, the standards tell us that all employers need to be encouraging employees to self-monitor for signs and symptoms of COVID-19. So again, this is probably something that most of you are already doing, but if you're not, you need to encourage employees to keep a lookout for any of the signs, such as trouble breathing, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, new confusion, inability to stay awake, bluish lips, bluish face. If you need a refresher on all the signs and symptoms, you can find that on the CDC's website. Number three is something that I think is relatively new, or maybe just something that most employers haven't thought about. But the standards say that we can't use antibody tests to make decisions about returning employees to work or grouping certain employees together in different areas of the workplace. So the antibody test is a test that's used to determine if people had the virus that causes COVID-19. And it could be that someone had the virus and never got sick, never had any signs and symptoms. And there's some discussion in the medical community as to whether people who have had the virus are now immune from infection. And there's some debate on that issue. But there's no debating what's in our new standards, which is that if an employer obtains this kind of information, you can't use this information when making decisions about returning people to the workplace. Number four, again, I think this is another pretty common one, but employers need to develop a procedure for all employees to report symptoms of COVID-19 or a diagnosis of COVID-19. Number five, the standards provide that we can't allow employees who are known or suspected to have COVID-19 to report to work or visit customer sites until they've been cleared to return to work. So what does it mean for somebody to be cleared to return to work? I think this is a question that has come up for a lot of employers recently, and the standards provide the answer. So consider two different scenarios. Under the first scenario, if you have an employee who has tested positive for COVID-19, or maybe they didn't test positive, but they had signs and symptoms of COVID-19, that employee can't return to work until one of two things has happened. The first is the employee has to have no fever for 72 hours without the use of fever-reducing medications, and at least 10 days have to have passed since the symptoms first appeared. And the second is if the employee has no fever, improved respiratory symptoms, and has had two negative COVID-19 tests that were taken 24 hours apart, you can return that individual safely to the workplace. Now consider another scenario. What if an employee has tested positive for COVID-19, but they don't have any symptoms? So these are the asymptomatic individuals. Those employees are not allowed to return to work until one of two things happens. First, at least 10 days have passed since the diagnosis, and that's assuming that no symptoms developed at a later date. Or two, the employee has to undergo two negative tests that, again, are 24 hours or more apart. Number six, employers need to ensure that they're being flexible with their sick leave policies and that they're continuing to comply with the FFCRA, which is the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. This is the federal law that requires 2 weeks of paid leave if employees meet certain conditions, such as being instructed to quarantine by a physician, if they're waiting to be tested for coronavirus, or if they've received a positive diagnosis. Number seven, the standards instruct employers that they need to be thinking about discussions they might want to have with subcontractors and temp agencies. So this one is a little bit new. If you've got subcontractors that are in your workplace, or if you're utilizing temp agencies, you want to have a discussion with those agencies about the importance of requiring employees to stay home if they have signs of COVID-19. Number eight, the standards require that employers establish a system for all employees to report a positive COVID-19 diagnosis. So if an employee reports a positive diagnosis, employers then have certain notification requirements. The first is that within 24 hours of learning about that diagnosis, you need to notify all other workers who may have been exposed. And keep in mind that when you need to notify other workers of potential exposure, we need to do everything that we can to not identify the individual with the positive diagnosis. It's sufficient to let an employee know that you have reason to believe that they've come into close contact with an individual who received a positive diagnosis. You also need to notify any other employers whose employees or subcontractors might have been present at your work site. You need to notify the building and facility owner. And within 24 hours, you have to notify the Virginia Department of Health. And if you have three or more employees who test positive, you also need to notify the Virginia Department of Labor and Industry within 24 hours of learning of that test. Number 9, the standards require that employers provide access to an employee's own COVID-19 disease-related exposure and medical records. And if you're an employer engaged in the business of agriculture, marine terminals, or longshoring, you've got some additional requirements, which I'm not going to cover today, but just know that those are out there. Number 10, and this is a requirement that really should be familiar to just about everybody at this point, but it relates to social and physical distancing. So the standards say that employers have to ensure physical distancing throughout the workplace, which is making sure that employees can keep at least 6 feet of distance between one another or more. And this can be done through verbal announcements, placing signs in the workplace, decreasing the work density by limiting non-employees' access to the property, complying with any occupancy limits that might be contained in Virginia's executive orders. And if, for whatever reason, distancing is not feasible, employers need to require their employees to wear face coverings. Moving on to number 11, companies need to ensure that common areas and break rooms allow for physical distancing and appropriate hand washing. Again, I think this is something that most employers have been doing for months at this point, but if you haven't, then you want to take a look at your break rooms and common areas and consider whether it makes sense to reconfigure tables to allow for more social distancing. Another thing to consider is only allowing a certain number of people into a break room at any given time. And if you do put a cap on the number of people that are allowed, post a sign that makes it clear to employees that only a certain number of employees are allowed in this room at any given point in time. The other thing that employers need to do is make sure that you've got appropriate sanitizing and cleaning supplies and require employees to disinfect the immediate area that they used. In the alternative, the standards say that if the company arranges for disinfecting at regular intervals throughout the day, you don't have to require employees to do this on their own. Okay, number 12. If your company requires multiple employees to occupy a work vehicle, you need to make sure that you're complying with respiratory protection and any other necessary PPE. Number 13, ensure that all common areas, including your bathrooms, are disinfected at the end of each shift. Again, something that most companies are probably already doing. And finally, number 14, there are some anti-discrimination provisions in the new standards that remind employers that you can't discriminate against any employee who exercises his or her rights under the new standards, wants to voluntarily wear PPE, or raises any concerns with the company about infection control. Okay, so that concludes the requirements that apply to all employers moving forward under these new standards. It's not that bad, right? And like I said, at least half of those things are things that your company is probably already doing. So let's shift gears a little bit and get into classifying job tasks. Every employer is going to have to do this, and it's not quite as difficult as it might sound. So like I said before, there are four classifications. We've got very high, high, medium, and low exposure risk. And a simple way to think about this is that we can break these classifications down into essentially two groups: employers in the healthcare industry, and then everybody else. So if you're in the healthcare industry, you need to pay particular attention to hazards or job tasks that are classified as very high or high. So briefly, let's talk about the very high job tasks. All right, this is about as risky as you can get, because it applies to employees who are having direct contact with known or suspected sources of the virus that cause COVID-19, such as coming into contact with laboratory samples, or individuals who are known or suspected of having COVID-19 or the virus. So this is going to apply to a lot of frontline medical folks, individuals engaged in post-mortem activities, laboratory procedures where there's a high risk of an aerosol-generating procedure. And an aerosol-generating procedure is something like intubation, a cough induction procedure, some dental procedures, And the standards provide a few more examples, but I think you get the point. So anything involving the handling or collecting of specimens, or if you're an individual who's performing an autopsy, those are the kinds of jobs that are going to qualify as very high risk. So let's talk about the high risk level. All right, this is essentially everyone else in the healthcare industry who's not classified as a very high risk. And these employees are not necessarily collecting specimens or being subjected to aerosol-generating procedures, but they are likely to be within 6 feet of someone known or suspected to have COVID-19 or the virus that causes it. So this applies to a lot of healthcare workers, first responders, medical transport employees, individuals who are engaged in mortuary services. Those are the kinds of workers that are going to be classified as high risk. Okay, so that gets us to the medium risk category. And like I said earlier, this is the category that is most likely going to apply to the majority of employers in Virginia. So if you have employees who are going to have more than minimal contact inside 6 feet with other employees, other persons, or members of the general public who may be infected with the virus, but are not known or suspected to be infected with the virus, which is basically all of us, then you are a medium risk level employee. There is a long list of examples provided in the standards, just to name a few. People who work in the transportation industry, colleges and universities, restaurants, retail industry, convenience stores, all of those folks are going to be having contact with the general public. And most of that contact is going to be within 6 feet. So those categories of job positions are classified as medium. And finally, we get to the lower risk classification. Now, this category is only going to apply to employees who don't require contact inside of 6 feet with persons who are known to be, suspected of being, or who may be infected with the virus. All right, so we're talking minimal occupational contact with general members of the public. These are the folks who are going to work strictly in an office building setting, or folks who are able to achieve minimal occupational contact through maybe the installation of barriers, telecommuting, staggered work shifts, etc. So I think we're going to have a relatively low number of employees who qualify as low risk. Okay, so we're coming down the home stretch here, I promise. We already know that there are certain standards and requirements that apply to all employers, regardless of how their employees are classified. There are some additional requirements for employers who have employees classified in the very high, high, or medium risk level categories. So let's talk first about those with very high and high risk employees. And again, this is going to apply mostly in the healthcare setting. Those employers need to make sure that their HVAC systems are properly maintained and comply with certain standards. They need to make sure that any infected patients are placed in an airborne infection isolation room. They need to pre-screen their employees to make sure they're not exhibiting signs or symptoms of COVID-19. They also need to ensure that psychological and behavioral support is available to address employee stress at no cost to the employee. And of course, those employers also have some strict PPE requirements that they need to follow. So that brings us to, again, what I think is going to be a large group of employers in Virginia. And that's those employers who have employees classified in the medium risk level. So if you have any employees who qualify in the medium risk level, those employers, much like the hospitals, also need to make sure that their HVAC systems are being properly maintained and comply with strict standards. To the extent feasible, and that is defined as both technically feasible and economically feasible, those employers also need to be screening their employees prior to letting them into work to make sure they're not exhibiting signs or symptoms of COVID-19. They need to provide face coverings for anyone, even non-employees, who are suspected of having COVID-19 until that individual leaves the premises. And they also need to consider options such as teleworking, allowing for staggered shifts, flexible meeting and traveling options, installation of physical barriers, delivery of products, etc. Now, there's one unique requirement that's going to apply to those employers who have very high, high, and medium risk employees. those employers are going to have to complete a hazard assessment to determine if PPE is necessary and then complete a written certification. All right, it's not as complex as it sounds, and there's a form that's available on the Department of Labor's website, which kind of walks employers through what this process involves and provides a sample form which will constitute your certification. But this is important, and this is something that a lot of employers in Virginia are going to have to do. You may be in an industry that's heavily regulated by OSHA, and so you might be familiar with this process, but if not, make sure you take the time to look at this form and complete the hazard assessment in accordance with the proper standards. All right, the next item for discussion is the plan that I talked about at the beginning. This is the Infectious Disease Preparedness and Response Plan. This is going to apply to any employers who have very high and high-risk employees, and here's the catch, okay? If you have any employees who qualify as medium risk, and you're an employer with 11 or more employees, and this really seems to be the only exception, right? If you have fewer than 11 employees, which is not going to be a ton of companies, but if you're a very small business, you don't have to comply with this plan requirement. But for everybody else who's got medium risk level employees, you have until September 25th of this year to put together an infectious disease preparedness and response plan. Do not wait until the middle of September to start working on this. It is going to require some time, and it's going to require some effort. There's a template plan available on the Department of Labor's website, which will help you to get started. But you're going to need to designate an individual who is going to be responsible for implementing this plan. And the standards say that preferably that's going to be someone who's knowledgeable in infection control practices. You're going to have to make sure that you provide for employee involvement in the plan. If you're a workplace that's unionized, the union is most likely going to get involved in this process. The plan requires that you consider various risks and hazards in the workplace with regard to COVID-19. You're also going to have to consider employees' individual risk factors. You're going to have to make sure that you have contingency plans for outbreaks, such as increased absenteeisms, options for continuing operations with a reduced workforce. There's a lot that goes into this plan. And so again, the best advice I can offer is try to start working on this sooner rather than later. And finally, the last category is that we have some new training requirements. So if you have any job positions that are classified as very high, or medium, you need to arrange to train your employees on the requirements of the new standards, the method of transmission of the virus, signs and symptoms of COVID-19, certain risk factors, awareness that pre-symptomatic and asymptomatic persons can transmit the virus, safe and healthy work practices, PPE, anti-discrimination. You get the point. There's a very long list here. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of categories to cover, and it is, but the Department of Labor has made available through its website a PowerPoint that can be used as a template training policy. So if you use all the materials that are in that PowerPoint for your training purposes, you're going to comply with the standards. This is something that needs to be completed by August 26th of this year. So you've got about a month. This is another one of those things where you don't necessarily want to wait until a week before the deadline to try and organize this. The one exception to the training requirements is that if you're required to have one of the plans that I just spoke about, you also need to train your employees on those plans. But because the plans are not due until September 25th, you don't have to train your employees on the plan aspects until the end of September. Finally, if you are a purely low-risk employer, meaning that all of your employees fall into the low-risk category, you don't have to provide the training, but you do have to provide a written notice of the new standards, certain transmission information, symptoms, and healthy practices. Again, the Department of Labor has made this one easy. There's a form on their website that you can download and distribute to all those workers. Okay, well, that concludes this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I realize this is a lot of information to absorb at once, and I hope it's been helpful for you. If nothing else, I hope that this has provided a basic overview of what you may need to do for your company over the next couple of months. Just remember that a lot of this is new for all of us. We are all figuring this out as we go along. Reach out for help when you need it. Talk to your peers. Talk to people at other companies to see what they're doing. You have enough time to get this done. Make sure that you understand the standards and how they apply to your company. Make sure that all of your training requirements are in order if you have to provide training. And if you're one of the employers that needs to prepare a written plan, you have 2 months to get that done, which is plenty of time. So I wish everybody the best of luck. Until the next one, please stay safe and by all means, stay in touch.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.